The Ghost Eater. Moon madness? A touch of fever? I wish I could think so. But when I'm alone after dark in the waste places where my wanderings take me, and hear across infinite voids the demon echoes of those screams and snarls, and that detestable crunching of bones, I shudder again at the memory of that eldritch night. I knew less of woodcraft in those days, though the wilderness called just as strongly to me as it does now. Up to that night, I had always been careful to employ a guide, but circumstances now suddenly forced me to a trial of my own skill. It was midsummer in Maine, and despite my great need to get from Mayfair to Glendave by the next noon, I could find no person willing to pilot me. Unless I took the long route through Pultowisset, which would not bring me to my goal in time, there would be dense forests to penetrate. Yet, whenever I asked for a guide, I was met with refusal and evasion. Stranger that I was, it seemed odd that everyone should have glib excuses. There was too much important business on hand for such a sleepy village, and I knew that the natives were lying. But they all had imperative duties, or said that they had, and would do no more than assure me that the trail through the woods was very plain, running due north, and not in the least difficult for a vigorous young fellow. If I started while the morning was still early, they averred, I could get to Glendale by sundown and avoid a night in the open. Even then, I suspected nothing. The prospect seemed good, and I resolved to try it alone, let the lazy villagers hang back as they might. Probably I would have tried it even if I had suspected, for youth is stubborn, and from childhood I had only laughed at superstition and old wives' tales. So before the sun was high, I had started off through the trees at a swinging stride, lunch in my hand, Guardian automatic in my pocket, and belt filled with crisp bills of large denominations. From the distances given me and the knowledge of my own speed, I had figured on making Glendale a little after sunset. But I knew that even if I detained overnight through some miscalculation, I had plenty of camping experience to fall back on. Besides, my presence at my destination was not really necessary till the following noon. It was the weather that set my plans awry. As the sun rose higher, it scorched through even the thickest of the foliage and burned up my energy at every step. By noon, my clothes were soaking with perspiration, and I felt myself faltering in spite of all my resolution. As I pushed deeper into the woods, I found the trail greatly obstructed with underbrush, and at many points nearly effaced. It must have been weeks, perhaps months, since anyone had broken his way through, and I began to wonder if I could, after all, live up to my schedule. At length, having grown very hungry, I looked for the deepest patch of shade I could find and proceeded to eat the lunch which the hotel had prepared for me. There were some indifferent sandwiches, a piece of stale pie, and a bottle of very light wine. By no means sumptuous fare, but welcome enough to one in my state of overheated exhaustion. It was too hot for smoking to be of any solace, so I did not take out my pipe. Instead, I stretched myself at full length under the trees when my meal was done, intent on stealing a few moments' rest before commencing the last lap of my journey. I suppose I was a fool to drink that wine, for light though it was, it proved just enough to finish the work the sultry, oppressive day had begun.